As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
Well, yeah, buddy, the sun is rising over Missouri, folks, and it's time once again for a show-me showdown. We got breakfast on the table all across America, coffee brewing on the stove, and there's a revolution in the air. Be a part of it. Welcome to our Wednesday, June the 10th, 2009, to our broadcast to Become Vocal Local, coming to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. That's oraclebroadcasting.com. Got a little website out there you might want to visit. It's www.vocallocal.org. Going to get a new facelift here as soon as I can get it done. My name is William Roberts. I've got good news, lots of that, hard facts certainly, and we might even talk about solutions today. But if you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, you want to pay attention today because we're going to talk a little bit about that pursuit of happiness. Anyway, this is the home of philosophical radicalism early in the morning for me, where freedom is popular and remains the best hope for America. Interactive Talk Radio is the name of the game. To be a part of today's broadcast, you can pick up the phone, call in throughout the broadcast, and for those with unlimited long-distance access or in the Austin, Texas area, you may call 512-904-8014 to join us live on air. And from around America and around the world, you can call in toll-free at 866-841-1065, and your calls are welcome. You may also send your ideas for guests, show topics, and news to me via email at host@vocallocal.org. Host@vocallocal.org. That's host@vocallocal.org. And for those without internet access, listening via any of our affiliate stations and micro broadcasters, you too can be a part of it. Send your letters to me at William Roberts, Post Office Box 96, Exeter, Missouri, 65647. I got a bundle of nice letters yesterday. Thank you so very much for taking the time. I'll be bending my head over the notepad, responding to them quickly. And a big shout-out to our friends at Liberty Radio, Owensville, Missouri, Micro 1650 AM, Buffalo, New York, and 94.3 Elgin, Texas. Thank you all for broadcasting Become Vocal Local right into your local areas, just where we want to put this message. And I thank you very much for that. Again, my website is vocallocal.org. The listener column number is 866-841-1065. There's a change I need to make on my little page here. Let me put that in there. Today, precious metals continue to resist their efforts to reverse their bullish trends, all right? Lots of effort to reverse those trends by others, but they're doing pretty good. We'll talk about that in a minute. International financial community tired of playing the U.S. money game. We'll talk about that. Revolution, counter-revolution, strategies, lessons learned from the past. We'll go there. Of course, we'll take your calls and much more. Let's go into those market reports for Wednesday, June the 10th, 2009, as I get my brain fired up and my telephone stopped ringing. Active trading out of New York City, 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Gold was trading up $8.60 to $963.20 an ounce. Silver up 18 cents, trading at $15.40 an ounce. Platinum, big move, $20 upward, $1,269 an ounce. Palladium up $7 to $260. The lows and the highs in the gold spot market, very, very small spread, $10, less than $10, $9.60 spread there. But year on year, the 963.20 is a $69.40 gain and or a 7.78% return on your investment. So it just depends on how you look at things. Still doing better than the bank. The London Gold Fix, the boys set at a price at $961.25 today in the AM Gold Fix in London. The financials there, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed yesterday off a point to 8,763. The NASDAQ closed up 18 points at 1,860. The S&P was up 3 points at 942. We'll pick it up right there when we come back from this first break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
How would you like to cook any meal using no electricity or gas and cook your meals off the grid? Well, now you can, thanks to the Survival Oven. The Survival Oven is the most amazing off-grid solar oven that can cook anything that a conventional oven can without the energy bills. By condensing sunlight, the Survival Oven can produce temps up to 350 degrees, cook delicious and nutritious meals, sterilize water, dehydrate food, and so much more, all at zero operating costs. The Survival Oven can be used year-round, even in the coldest sub-zero temperatures, and is a must for emergency preparedness and even everyday use. Visit SurvivalOven.com to get your very own Survival Oven. Order the Survival Oven now, and we'll get you started with two cooking pots and a recipe booklet absolutely free. At less than 10 pounds, you can take Survival Solar Oven with you anywhere. Call 877-642-1553 or go to SurvivalOven.com. That's SurvivalOven.com.
Loan modifications don't work. At least not without some leverage from a forensic audit by mortgage fraud examiners. Have your payments skyrocketed under an adjustable rate mortgage? Have you been laid off or had your hours cut? Are balloon payments coming due? Congress and the White House are pinning their hopes on homeowners renegotiating their mortgages to stop the housing crisis. Trouble is, the banks are saying no 80% of the time. That's where mortgage fraud examiners comes in. They perform forensic loan audits and appraisals to find legal deficits in your mortgage. They estimate that up to 85% of all mortgages have legal problems. Banks and lenders suddenly start cooperating if faced with a lawsuit for violating lending laws or appraisal fraud. You could gain some powerful ammunition to use for mortgage fraud examiners. Get more information at www.mortgagefraudexaminers.com or call 800-540-EXAM. That's 800-540-3926.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Wednesday, June the 10th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local, getting things fired up here for this morning. My name is William Roberts. You're listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network. We're on the web, oraclebroadcasting.com. Be sure and check out that website today and do, if you can, when you can, where you can, do support the network so that we can keep this message coming to you day after day after day. And again, let's go back through and review some of those financials quickly. Gold was trading up $8.60 in New York City as of 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time, running at $963.20. Silver was up 18 cents at $15.40. Platinum up $20 at $1,269. $7 up at a word move in the palladium markets, $260. So going down through the Dow, we don't see much there. Yesterday's closings, there was almost no action at closing. But if you look at the charts for yesterday, it was a tremendous amount of up and down, up and down, and up and down. You know, it's like a saw blade, old cross-cut saw, just up and down it goes. But overall, it basically ended the same place as it started, not much action really in the stock market. The crude oil, that's not a pleasant scenario watching this go up, but you're going to see it go up. I've read a lot of articles on the Internet over the last couple of weeks that are indicating that we should see crude oil running between $70 and $80 throughout most of the summer. And so crude oil moved up $1.41 a barrel. Those are 42-gallon barrels. $1.41 move up for $71.42. You can do the math and then look at your pumps, the pumps in your local town at your gas station. I don't know, do they even have gas stations anymore down at the Get and Go, the Quick Stop, the Fast Lube, and all of those places? Well, that's, anyway, you're going to see it going up. So pay attention to that. And as I've been saying, for those with ears to hear and a brain that can understand this, if you've got a construction company, you've got lawn care business, something like that, if you're in the farming, ranching, if you haven't stocked up on some fuel and got your tank delivered and filled up, I think you're missing an opportunity here to put some money in your pocket, at least keep some money in your pocket. Buy your fuel now before the prices go up. They're likely to go up. Anyway, the U.S. dollar exchange today off about 9 basis points in trading so far at 79.77, again below that 80 level, and it's likely to go lower. And if you look at the gold prices going up, silver prices, all the precious metals trying to go up a little bit, and they're not going up much. If you look in the charts, go up there, www.kitco.com. I'm not plugging their site. It's just a site that has a lot of charts and useful information on it. You look at the charts there, and you'll see they have to change the XY scale frequently, the dollars over time. And they've got the scale set at $2 increments now, which is very tight, just so that we'll be able to see some kind of action going in these precious metals markets. But anyway, the trading is very little, very light. It's under a $10 spread so far in the day. We'll see where that goes. The foreign exchange rates, this is where we really want to look at. With the USDX being at 79.77, let's look and see what's happening in around the world in our little basket of currencies. The Canadian dollar is still trading at 91 cents. It's down just a little bit. But again, the multipliers is what you're really looking at. We can equate it as so many cents U.S. or so many dollars U.S., but it's these little multipliers that really make the difference, because that's while people that trade on the international markets, that's what they're looking at. So it's a 1.1041 is your multiplier. It comes out as 91 cents U.S. The Mexican peso, a lot of talk yesterday about a drastic decline in the Mexican peso. Well, it went down a little bit. It didn't go down very much, though, but it is now trading at 7 cents. Yesterday and for weeks it's been at 8 cents. So the way that the mathematics works out is it just now it's at 7 cents. It was very, very close to 8 cents for quite some time, and now it just dropped a little bit below that. So there you go. No great precipitous decline that I could find. The euro, $1.41 U.S. The British pound also up on today's trading at $1.64. Keep your eyes on that British pound. It's been moving up, and it's been moving up steadily. The Swiss franc hasn't seemed to change very much. 93 cents for fill up your pockets with Swiss francs for 93 cents a pop. In the bond market, the 2-year running at 1.30. The 10-year is 3.91, and the 30-year is 4.72. But I can tell you that from what I'm seeing on the Internet, people are not too interested in getting involved with 30-year instruments, anything denominated in dollars. Certainly 30 years is a bit more ambitious than most. Even the 10-year is looking down the road quite a long ways. What I'm seeing with the LIBOR and the other things, everybody's looking at more like about 30 days, 40 days. Well, Timmy is heading off to Italy. I don't know whether he's going to go over there and kiss the Pope's ring or whether he's going to kiss something else, but he's going to Italy. Probably get his marching instructions from the Black Pope or something, but I don't know. Maybe he'll go and beg at the feet of fiat and see if the fiat will take his fiat currency. I have no idea, but that's where he's heading. Let's go to pick up some news off Bloomberg. Alex Nicholson writes this article, Russia may swap U.S. Treasuries for IMF debt, Central Bank says. Brief article here. Russia's central bank may switch some of its reserves from U.S. treasuries to International Monetary Fund bonds. Get rid of those U.S. treasuries. Everybody's beside themselves. They're doing the two-step trying to figure out how to get rid of U.S. dollars. Continuing, the bank's first deputy chairman, Alexey Ulyakayev, said in Moscow today his comments were confirmed by a bank official who declined to be named, citing bank policy. In other words, a little finger-pointing going on there. No, I didn't say that. Alexei said that. Nah. Mm-hmm. Finance Minister Alexei Kudrin, that's a different Alexei, seems to be a popular first name over there in Russia, said last month that Russia planned to buy $10 billion of IMF bonds using money from its foreign reserves. Now take this. basket of currencies and get rid of that and buy bonds. Anyway, let's continue along on the stories. This out of Frankfurt, off of Reuters, Frankfurt, Germany, that would be, the European Central Bank gold reserves are down by 18 million euros in a week. Here's the article. Gold and gold receivables held by the Eurozone central banks fell by 18 million euros to 240.766 billion euros, or $333.9 billion U.S., in the week ending June 5th, the European Central Bank said on Tuesday. So what are we doing here? We've had gold disappearing all over the place. You know, we gave the story about how our 90% gold was winding up in, this compound gold was winding up in European markets, and everybody think it's hollering and screaming about getting our gold back, getting their gold back. Merkel was kind of blue in the face trying to get German gold back into their hands, getting them out of the custodial vaults, I suppose. I don't even know if they have any vaults for gold in the United States of America, but everybody's clamoring to get their gold out of the United States. You know, they see things melting down over here. But we see this happening as well. Net foreign exchange reserves in the euro system of central banks fell by 5.4 billion euros to 237 billion euros, the European Central Bank said in its regularly weekly consolidated financial statement. Gold holdings fell because of sales by two eurozone central banks, consistent with the 2004 central bank gold agreement, the ECB said. So they're taking the gold out of the vaults and putting it someplace. Where is it going? We'll pick it up on the other side. Stay with us.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Hey folks, I've got a question for you. Do you force yourself out of bed each morning and drag throughout the day? Do you grab for that sugar pick-me-up only to later crash and feel even more tired? Well, I've got the solution for you. Put a zip in your day and zap your appetite. Reclaim your get-up-and-go with Zip and Zap. Let me tell you what you'll notice in immediate benefits. It ramps up your workouts. Well, if you work out. Turns off your hunger, elevates your mood, helps you to resist fattening foods, and gives you a smooth flow of energy with no crash. The testimonials? Colin in Illinois lost 30 pounds in 8 weeks, didn't work out. Susie in Missouri, 10 pounds in 20 days, she didn't work out. Anna in California did work out and went from a size 14 to a size 4 in 90 days. If you want results like this, working out or not, order Zip and Zap now and also ask about Lametco International's first line of defense products. Tell them Michael Herzog sent you. Call 1-800-933-2565. That's 1-800-933-2565.
You invest. You buy insurance. You wear your seatbelt. You do things to ensure your family's future and protection. But why? Just in case? With the current state of affairs, ask yourself, am I ready? Preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com. SurvivalGearSource.com has a huge selection of vital products, emergency survival kits, gas masks, MREs, products for pet care, your car, home, office, and school. Protect against pandemics, all natural disasters, and terror attacks that can happen at any time. If you're not prepared, the last place you want to be is standing in a FEMA line. Invest in your future now. Visit SurvivalGearSource.com or call 877-231-1925. That's 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. That's SurvivalGearSource.com. 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com.
Prepare for tomorrow now, and for a free gift on your first order, enter coupon code Oracle at checkout. Don't forget, preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com.
And we've returned. Let's go back into the news again a little bit further here. We've got another article off Bloomberg. U.S. trade gap widens in April as the export slumped. And boy, I'll tell you, this is a repeating fantasy. I went through the went all up on the internet. I got up about 5 o'clock this morning. Beautiful, beautiful morning here in southwest Missouri. The sun's shining now, but it was just really nice as the sun was rising up. Quiet, calm in this little neighborhood that I'm kind of pretty well forced to live in at this moment. Beautiful morning. Nevertheless, got up early, hit the internet, looking for some news. That's like a regurgitorium. I don't know if you ever read about those back in Rome and Greece. The people like just gorge themselves on food and then they just upchuck and do it again. You know, they just like eating, I guess. But that's kind of the way that the news has been looking lately. It's kind of interesting. No one really has anything to say. And so they're just pulling all this stuff out of their old copy and paste files and sticking it up there. And apparently that's going to constitute news or public notice for the day. Anyway, this is an article that has some information in it, but a lot of it's just it's just repetition. It's stuff that we've talked about in the past. I'll go into it a little bit, though. The U.S. trade deficit widened in April for a second month as exports dropped to the lowest level in almost 3 years, offering little sign of an end to the worst global recession in the post-World War II era. Now, you read through the other news articles on the web, and, you know, if you're getting it from White House sources, they're talking about all of this, you know, rosy outlook and everything's, hey, it's getting better, it's healing, what we're doing is working. But the facts belie this whitewash that's coming out. So anyway, they talk then, and notice again, the U.S. trade deficit widened in April for a second month. I mean, we're talking about, 2 days up in the gold market or 2 days up in the stock market or 2 days up for the U.S. dollar index. You know, and it's like we've got somebody descending out of the clouds onto, Jerusalem. And then, you know, you get it to go the other way one day and they'll talk about something else. And it's an airliner crash or something. But it's interesting. It's interesting. We're living in difficult times, to be sure. The gap between the imports and the exports grew by 2.2% to $29.2 billion. Now, the gap between imports, what we import into the country, and what we export grew, all right, just tiny, $29.2 billion, 2.2%, in line with forecasts. So somebody was looking and thinking, well, you know, hey, you know, we might see about a 2.2% gap or a widening. Well, makes you wonder. From a revised $28.5 billion in March that was larger than previously estimated. In other words, they blew it last month. The Commerce Department said today in Washington, foreign demand for U.S. goods has dropped by 2.3%. So the gap between the imports and the exports grew by 2.2%. But the demand for U.S. goods dropped by 2.3%, exceeding a decrease in imports. And so, yes, there are tiny little numbers that we're talking about here about what's being imported and what's being exported. Imports may rebound first in coming months as the U.S. economy begins to expand. What are they talking about when they say the U.S. economy begins to expand? Are we talking about inflation kicking in the next or coming months? You know, we can, when we're talking about imports and exports and we're expressing them in dollars, we need to take into account the inflated value of these dollars or the inflated, the decline in the value of the dollars, but we're expressing it in more dollars. So as the purchasing power of a dollar goes down, these import numbers are obviously going to have to go up because somebody's going to have to pay for something. And so we might see 29.3 billion, and then we'd see 29.8 billion in imports, and then 35.7 billion in imports, and everybody's going, wow, recovery, it's here. But we're bringing in fewer items. You know, why don't we say, express it in tons or boxes of cheap Chinese plastic crap, you know, or how many trucks it took to haul it away, so on and so forth. Expressing it in dollars is going to become increasingly difficult. You go back and you look at the Weimar Republic and we start watching as the dollars began being denominated in first hundreds and then thousands and then millions and then in billions and then in trillions. You down and look at the Zimbabwean dollars, you know, trillions expressed, if you can imagine such a thing, for people that might not even be able to do mathematics, you know. So anyway, we're going to start to see these numbers increasing. And if we foolishly allow ourselves to believe that this is recovery just because it's being expressed in greater and greater dollars, I think we'll be making mistakes. Hopefully these people in Washington can figure this out. Imports, they say, may rebound in the first in coming months. In other words, we'll begin importing more than exporting. Well, that's not a strong economy. We should be exporting more than we're importing. If you want to talk about recovery. Dropping down further in the article, we're certainly not looking for trade to be a leading component of the U.S. recovery. Stephen Gallagher, the chief U.S. economist at Société Générale in New York, said before the report, we're certainly not looking for trade to be a leading component of U.S. recovery. Well, if we're not looking at trade, Stephen, what are we looking at? What are we looking at? Isn't that the best indicator of recovery of an economy? Yeah. He says, as the inventory situation improves, businesses will start importing a bit more. What is the inventory situation improving that would cause businesses to start importing a little bit more? But he says, that's a few months away. The rest of the world will, on average, be weak. What is this inventory as the inventory situation improves? What he's basically saying here, I think, if I can infer anything here, is that when something is sold, when the inventory starts, what they have in their shelves, what they have stacked up in these big box stores, when that stuff actually starts to sell, then business will start improving or importing a bit more. Well, naturally, when they have 2 or 3 day lag time on most items anyway. This is that instant delivery process that we have going on in our stores. But obviously, people are not buying these materials. How are you going to have 6.6 to maybe 9 million people unemployed on a running average or more across the United States and have inventory situations improving? If you don't have any money to buy products, the whole world economy, the global economy, is going to suffer because the American consumer isn't consuming their goods. And it doesn't really matter how much you throw into it as far as dollar-denominated debt is concerned. It doesn't change anything until people are actually working. And CCC jobs and make-work jobs aren't going to cut the mustard for that. The Economist forecast continues, he says, the trade gap was projected to widen to 29 billion from an initially reported 27 billion in March. Okay. According to the median forecast in a Bloomberg News survey of 73 economists, blah, blah, blah. Deficit projections ranged from 31.5 billion to 26 billion. And so this is where they're building up this gap between imports and exports. I think we're walking a very fine line here, folks. A very, very fine line. Be right back. Stay with me.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Now on DVD, my newest documentary film, The Secret Rite, Volume 1. I'm Josh Reeves, and for the almost 2 years, I have researched the secretive right-wing group known as the Council for National Policy. This film explores for the first time the hidden hand that controls the religious and military aims of the American right wing, with such topics as Iran-Contra, the John Birch Society, eugenics, the Vatican controllers, Christian Zionists, the Bohemian Grove, the Patriot Movement, and more. More powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations, more secretive than the Bilderberg Group, The Secret Rite Volume 1 goes where no other film has dared to go. Get your copy today at secretrightmovie.com. That's www.secretrightmovie.com. And find out what you haven't been told about the New World Order.
We're going into the press today. We've taken our
How would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor. Absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate control clock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
Okay, so this article continues along here, and it states this. Recovery here depends upon recovery abroad. That was a quote from Timmy Geithner, who departs this weekend for weekend meetings in Italy with counterparts from some of the world's biggest economies. Recovery here depends on recovery abroad. Part of the problem with all of this internationalist mentality, all this transnational corporation and the great global community, is these dependencies, this interdependency that has been created. We're paying the price for this, folks, and we're paying it in a big way. I noticed in another article earlier in the morning, Robert Zolik was up talking with the Canadians. They were talking about protectionism. Canadians didn't take it very lightly that the U.S. was going an America First policy again, and they brand that as protectionism, so they wanted to do an Canadian First policy up there, and Zolik had to, from the World Bank, wanted to rush up there and try and pat them on the head and try and keep them happy. But if recovery here depends on recovery abroad, we're in trouble. If we're waiting for the rest of the world to feel wonderful and happy, I think we're looking in the wrong place. We need to be focusing, concentrating our energies right here at home. But we've got this brain-dead Geithner, you know, running all around the world here, hugging everybody else. He says, we're working closely with our major, other major economies to put in place the fiscal stimulus and make the financial repairs necessary to ensure U.S. and global recovery. Again, what is it to put into place, this fiscal stimulus? From the little bits that I've gotten off of a variety of articles, the other countries around the world are not so enthusiastic about this idea of inflating their currency by throwing billions and billions, if not trillions, of their currency notes into existence to stimulate the or do quantitative easing in their countries' economies. So I guess Geithner's on a sales mission, trying to convince everybody in the soundness of their plans. Talking more about the imports and exports here, imports decreased 1.4% to $150.3 billion, this article states, the fewest since September of 2004. So we have to go all the way back to find this number, but they found this number in September of 2004. What it means to us, I don't know. But the drop was led by declines in purchases of fuel other than crude oil, so that's processed fuel. There are other countries around the planet that are processing fuel, and then I guess we were importing gasoline ready-made with or without the ethanol, or has to be blended into it, jet fuel, kerosene, diesel, etc. But so they say, led by declines in purchases of fuel other than crude oil, drilling equipment. As if drilling equipment makes up a huge part of our imports? Makes me scratch my head. How about you? Computer accessories and toys from abroad. Are we dependent upon all this cheap Chinese plastic crap, all these little tippy-tappy things, all these computer accessories and toys? This is making up our economy? Well, I know I've been into the Walmart reluctantly to buy printer supplies, computer accessories for my HP printer, which seems to eat more of these little non-refillable cartridges than anyone could ever imagine. Whatever I saved buying the thing, I've certainly spent in the ink many times over, by the way. But I guess these are those computer accessories they're pointing to here. But toys? Now, there's aisles and aisles of toys in the Walmart. There's even a pretty good toy section in the grocery store. Anyway, imports of crude oil rose as the price climbed to $46.60 a barrel. This is a June 10th article, and we're looking at crude oil today at $71.42 and probably going to be $80 soon. A little bit dated information there. Higher fuel costs will probably keep boosting the import bill. A barrel of crude oil in New York Mercantile Exchange touched a seven-month high of $70.32 on June the 5th, compared with an average of $49.95 in April. I do hope you've taken advantage of the opportunity to buy yourself a pretty good reserve of fuel before these prices have gone up. I think they're going to go even higher. After eliminating the influence of prices, which are the numbers used to calculate gross domestic product, the trade deficit grew to $39.4 billion. What do they mean, after eliminating the influence of prices? They say liars, you know, figures don't lie, but liars figure. There's a lot of that in these kinds of articles. I don't think it's worth going any further. I get the idea. You see how difficult it might be to wake up in the morning and then go up on the internet and try and find some news worth reporting. This stuff is garbage. Are we getting anything factual out of our government? These reporting offices, these agents that make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. These G6s, G7, G8s, you know, they've got every conceivable kind of a healthcare program and a retirement program and all of that, you know. Living in these fine houses and these planned unit developments all around Washington, D.C., and this is the stuff they're generating? I think it's time to implement Operation Clean Sweep. It's time to start at the very top and sweep our way down to the basement and get all these cobwebs and garbage out of Washington, D.C., and then turn our attention to the state houses and the county courthouses and then bring it right on into our towns and our cities and our and just keep right on going. Let's go into something a little bit more interesting, at least more interesting to me. I hope it is for you as well. We've been talking about revolution and counter-revolution, trying to wrap our minds around this idea that revolution is one thing, and counter-revolution is a outgrowth of that, a reaction to the revolution, and that we've also brought into the mix here public opinion and cross currents of public opinion, how they influence all of these parts and pieces in this social and economic and political world that we find ourselves in. These aren't things that we're going to be able to change quickly. But if we understand some of these various actions and reactions better, we can perhaps understand what's going on around us. And then if we can find carefully selected points to interact within the system, we may be able to affect some changes and get ourselves back onto a footing that's more certain so that we can move into a future that does not look so grim. There's a lot of young people, and when I say young people, I'm talking about, you know, Timmy Geithner and those guys, people that are involved in politics and the economy and whatnot, that are products of our educational system, and perhaps they are historically challenged. In other words, they really don't know even so much what country they live in, much less what time of man they live in. They have no real clear understanding, perhaps, of things that have happened in the past. They really don't understand philosophy. They don't understand religion. They don't understand all of the various and sundry things that have gotten us from the last 6,500 years up to here. As a result, they're easily swept aside by every wind of doctrine that comes down the pike. And preferring to hold their jobs and continue their lifestyles to learning anything and charting better courses, they just continue to repeat endlessly the same errors over and over again, which, as you all know, as trite as it seems, is a sure sign of insanity. Making the same mistakes over and over again, hoping for different results. But anyway, we started in a little bit from Albert Van Dicey's Law and Public Opinion in England during the 19th century, and yesterday we started this chapter, it's a lecture, Lecture 12, The Relation Between Legislative Opinion and the General Public Opinion. You've got everyone out there clamoring now, you know, to audit the Fed, end the Fed rallies, etc. Yeah. I'll give you all that. The Federal Reserve banking system is a real problem. It's a genuine problem, and it needs to go bye-bye. But auditing this beast is likely to produce nothing more useful for us than the whitewash commission out of, you know, regarding to the incidents that happened on September the 11th in New York City and Washington, D.C., and over Shanksville, Pennsylvania. So calling for an audit, you know, an audit can only be as good and useful as the integrity of the auditor. And if the auditor is the government or the Fed auditing themselves, it'll be another whitewash report and of little or no value. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skincare, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at purebulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at purebulk.com.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book, exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
All right, so back to this idea then of law and public opinion and the cross currents of public opinion. We go back and we look at Eustace Mullins and come forward from there. A lot of people that were writing, and even prior to him, even at the time of the creation of the Federal Reserve banking system, fractional reserve banking and all that, there was a reaction to that, opposition to that system of banking. And strong central banks, I mean, it goes all the way back to the dispute between Alexander Levine Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson. But we find this cause and effect relationship always running like threads throughout all of history. And so today now we're seeing that we have this one group that is championing, you know, the Ron Paul-led H.R. 1207, one more time, coming back in again. Calling for strong audit and revision or, you know, expulsion of the Federal Reserve. And then yesterday, or perhaps the day before, I reported on Linda Robertson being hired by the Federal Reserve to present paint a new face, apply new lipstick to this old pig. So that's your cross current of public opinion that will be coming along. And then we'll have another action and another reaction, and then it just keeps seesawing back and forth, trying to get a piece of legislation out of committee. And then if it goes to some kind of a Senate committee or some other independent group, it won't be independent, you can be sure of that, some other kind of a congressionally sanctioned group to actually press forward with an audit, then a report will come out, a report will eventually be issued, and the odds are probably 10 to 1 that in favor of it coming out painting the Federal Reserve banking system as the great savior. Oh my goodness, if it hadn't been for the Fed, well, we would have just, you know, been in horrible. Look at all of the blessings, you know, we should all be so thankful. And then that will be the official history, and we'll go down the road with the Fed for another 40 years of despotism. So anyway, Another aspect of all of this is the idea of evangelicalism and the evangelical right, if you will, the various and sundries, all the various religious aspects in our system and where they came from and how they developed are important. Regardless of individual viewpoints on religion, whether it's, you know, the efficacy of it or not, whether you believe in any of the things that are in the Bible or anything that the pastors, the preachers, the rabbis tell you or not, they still have had a substantial impact on history. We started out in our study with anarchy and discovered basically, right out of the Bible, that the disciples of the one known as Christ were to be anarchs. They were not to have the archons ruling over them. They were to be looking to God for that. All right. And so we brought it forward from there, and we're still involved in that discovery. There's still a lot more to discuss about anarchy that we haven't gotten to quite yet. We're having to kind of lay down the philosophical and the historical underpinnings of other things so that we understand more properly what modern anarchy is all about, especially when we get into discussing international anarchy, which is a real problem for us as we move into this new world order. But from churchianity, let's follow a little bit out of Albert Van Dicey's book. And this is a footnote. The evangelical movement, writes Dr. Dale, had its characteristic spirit as well as its characteristic creed, and this spirit is not hard to discover. So remember, we've talked about whenever we're involved in these various and sundry isms, it's important for us to understand that the isms almost invariably, words like euphemism or aphorism, that's different. I'm talking about the isms, the belief systems, communism, capitalism, socialism, Protestantism, etc. Buddhism, Jainism. If you study into them, you'll find that not only is there a faith statement somewhere, but there's oftentimes and generally also a founder. And so, this evangelical movement had both its own spirit and its own creed, and so we can find out more about it. He says, and this spirit is not hard to discover. Its supreme care in the days of its strength was not for any ideal of ecclesiastical polity, ecclesiastical government, if you will, polity. It contributed to the extinction amongst Congregationalists, and I think, he writes, among Baptists and Presbyterians, of that solicitude for an ideal church organization which had so large a place in the original revolt of the nonconformists against the Elizabethan settlement of the English church. Big sentence, lots of stuff there. There's months of research in there. And it gives you lots of different places that you can go and find out more. The Congregationalists, the Nonconformists, the Baptists, the Presbyterians, the Episcopalians, the Evangelicals, and all of that. But in this, the thread that's running in here is this ideal church organization. What would be the government of the church? What would it look like from a political standpoint? And there was great controversy involved in all of this. You know, so many of the people that came to this country, to the colonies, came here seeking largely religious and personal freedom. And so we need to be paying attention to that because that has not gone away. And when you talk about the billions and billions of people who on Wednesday night or Friday night or Saturday or Sunday or whatever day they hold holy days, you talk about the billions of people who are then reaching into their pockets and taking out their little mite and dropping it in the plate. You know, it's like McDonald's. It's billions and billions serve, and it adds up to real money in a hurry. They said in the Zeitgeist DVD that if someone loaned it to me to look at, you know, this God of the churches though it was capable of creating all of the universe spontaneously, is always broke and needs more money. So they pass the plate regularly to make sure that their God has plenty of money. No offense intended, it's just a phenomenon. Now, continuing, he says, nor were the evangelical clergy zealous supporters of episcopacy. That's the English church, Episcopal Church. Their imagination was not touched by that great, though as we believe, false conception of the church which fired the passion of the leaders of the Tractarian revival. Again, if you're not familiar with these various terms, go back and listen in the archive and write them down, note them down, and then turn to your dictionaries and your encyclopedias and try and find out who some of these people were. What influences did they have? And how many political leaders and leaders and statesmen, their eyes of the statist, how many of them were following these various religious threads and inserting that through public opinion and cross currents of a public opinion into the laws and the legislation that rests upon our neck now so heavily that it's no longer the rule of law but the reign of law. So continuing here, he says the evangelical, don't want to skip that. Let me see. So now, were the evangelical clergy zealous supporters of episcopacy, their imagination was not touched by that great, though, as we believe, false conception of the church, which fired the passion of the leaders of the Tractarian revival, a church whose living ministers can claim to inherit, by unbroken succession, awful powers and prerogatives attributed to the original apostles. And so by taking the Bible and making personal interpretations of what it says, and literal interpretations of what it said, in other words, actually sitting down and translating it and working the words out the way that you think they should be translated, great changes have occurred, but these awful powers and prerogatives attributed to the original the apostles have been arrogated to various deacons and things like that in modern churches. As though someone can say a prayer over a handkerchief and then place it on someone else, send it in the mail, and place it on someone else, and that person might expect healing from such activity. There's been all kinds and manners of things that have come out of these various denominations. We'll pick that up on the other side as we go into our second hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
How would you like to cook any meal using no electricity or gas and cook your meals off the grid? Well, now you can, thanks to the Survival Oven. The Survival Oven is the most amazing off-grid solar oven that can cook anything that a conventional oven can without the energy bills. By condensing sunlight, the Survival Oven can produce temps up to 350 degrees, cook delicious and nutritious meals, sterilize water, dehydrate food, and so much more, all at zero operating costs. The Survival Oven can be used year-round, even in the coldest sub-zero temperatures, and is a must for emergency preparedness and even everyday use. Visit SurvivalOven.com to get your very own survival oven. Order the Survival Oven now, and we'll get you started with two cooking pots and a recipe booklet absolutely free. At less than 10 pounds, you can take Survival Solar Oven with you anywhere. Call 877-642-1553 or go to SurvivalOven.com. That's SurvivalOven.com.
As America limps on its lost legs, a pillar of truth has risen. You're listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Wednesday, June the 10th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. We do come to you Monday through Friday right here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com on the websites, on the internet, excuse me. I've got a little website out there. It's vocallocal.org. You might want to check that out today. It's not a whole lot of information on there, but it gives you a little bit of an idea of what I'm talking about when I'm speaking about becoming vocal local. My name is William Roberts, and we're deep into a study now and continuing our study of this idea of revolution and counter-revolution and public opinion and cross-currents of public opinion, trying to wrap our mind around the philosophical radicalism of the past that has so shaped the present that to be ignorant of it is just almost a commission of sin, if you want to put it that way. And we might as well, because we're talking about churchianity. In the preceding segment, I've been reading from a footnote out of Albert Van Dicey's book on, it's called Law and Public Opinion in England during the 19th century. It's important in so far as we understand what is the pursuit of happiness. Governments are instituted among men to secure the blessings of life, of liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And yet you won't find one person out of 100 that could even tell you how those words found their way into the Declaration of Independence or what was meant by the expression. So we could champion for all of our liberties and talk all about life, but what is the pursuit of happiness? And this is kind of where we're going, trying to understand this. Continuing here and understanding also that, you know, a lot of this right wing there, I let people be whatever they want to believe. You know, as Thomas Jefferson said, you know, it doesn't matter to him whether his neighbor had one God, 100 gods, or no gods. It was of no impact on his life whatsoever. And as long as it doesn't impact our lives, I believe strongly that my rights end where your rights begin. And as long as what I'm doing doesn't impact your rights and what you're doing does not impact my rights, then we can live harmoniously. In close proximity, even within the same household. But here, let's go back and understand again this evangelical. We hear about the evangelical right, you know. Well, we're talking about England in the 19th century, in other words, the 1800s, the evangelical movement encouraged what is called an undenominational temper. See, they're developing something here in all of this. Something is coming out of this that will then go on to shape law, legislation, customs, cultures, tongues, tribes, and creeds. The evangelical movement encouraged what is called an undenominational temper. Remember on October the 31st of 1517 when Martin Luther, the great theologian and jurisprude, nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Church, he essentially crucified Christ afresh, all right, and drove a wooden hub right into the heart of Christendom, because up until that time there was one established universal church, the Roman Church, and none other. And so we crossed this threshold from the old world order into the New World Order, and here, centuries later, we find ourselves in this idea of undenominational or non-denominational temper, or a multitude of these various sects, S-E-C-T-S's, all looking to the same, ostensibly the same book, the Bible, and coming out with various private interpretations of how it should be used to guide themselves in their societies. And we'll pick it up right there on the other side. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Loan modifications don't work, at least not without some leverage from a forensic audit by mortgage fraud examiners. Have your payments skyrocketed under an adjustable rate mortgage? Have you been laid off or had your hours cut? Are balloon payments coming due? Congress and the White House are pinning their hopes on homeowners renegotiating their mortgages to stop the housing crisis. Trouble is, the banks are saying no 80% of the time. That's where Mortgage Fraud Examiners comes in. They perform forensic loan audits and appraisals to find legal deficits in your mortgage. They estimate that up to 85% of all mortgages have legal problems. Banks and lenders suddenly start cooperating if faced with a lawsuit for violating lending laws or appraisal fraud. You could gain some powerful ammunition to use for Mortgage Fraud Examiners. Get more information at www.mortgagefraudexaminers.com or call 800-540-EXAM. That's 800-540-3926.
Aerial spraying, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Hey folks, I've got a question for you. Do you force yourself out of bed each morning and drag throughout the day? Do you grab for that sugar pick-me-up only to later crash and feel even more tired? Well, I've got the solution for you. Put a zip in your day and zap your appetite. Reclaim your get-up-and-go with Zip and Zap. Let me tell you what you'll notice in immediate benefits. It ramps up your workouts. Well, if you work out. Turns off your hunger, elevates your mood, helps you to resist fattening foods, and gives you a smooth flow of energy with no crash. The testimonials? Colin in Illinois lost 30 pounds in 8 weeks, didn't work out. Susie in Missouri, 10 pounds in 20 days, she didn't work out. Anna in California did work out and went from a size 14 to a size 4 in 90 days. If you want results like this, working out or not, order Zip and Zap now and also ask about Lametco International's first line of defense products. Tell them Michael Herzog sent you. Call 1-800-933-2565. That's 1-800-933-2565.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And we're back on our Wednesday, June the 10th, 2009, to our broadcast to Become Vocal Local, going into our second hour here. Again, my name is William Roberts. We're talking about some politics and religion today. It's one of those topics that, you know, you don't get to get into very often. Nobody really wants to go there. Once you start tampering with people's belief systems, your room clears quickly. Perhaps you've experienced that as well. But it certainly happens in my life often. People just really don't want to talk about these kind of things. You start getting involved with their Ishtar bunny and, you know, their Satan claws and all the rest of that. And they just want to fly away from you. They don't want to stick around. But I hope you're paying attention. Because it impacts our lives every single day, whether we want to embrace these ideas or whether we don't. And they've shaped the countries around the world in such a fashion that, you know, now we're struggling against Islam. Concerned about the Hebrew boys over there in that rock pile called Israel. The red-headed stepchild that needs to be given its own car so that maybe it can go out and find a living on its own without having to pilfer out of the U.S. coffers continuously for its existence, and so on and so forth. It never ends. But back here to Van Dyce's writings, talking about the evangelical movement, which encouraged what is called an undenominational temper. It emphasized the vital importance of the evangelical creed, but it regarded almost with indifference all forms of church polity that were not in apparent and irreconcilable antagonism to that creed. What on earth is that? You champion for a specific creed and you advance a specific creed, but then you hold in apparent and irreconcilable antagonism anyone that follows that creed? Why? Well, let's find out. It demanded as the basis of fellowship a common religious life and common religious beliefs, but was satisfied with fellowship of an accidental and precarious kind. It cared nothing for the idea of the church as the august society of saints. It, the evangelical movement, was the ally of individualism. And so we could make an entire study, and perhaps we should, of just what is individualism and track it out, find its founder, find its creeds, its faith statements, and lay it out so that we understand that as well. You know, we're railing against the machine, this global idea, the internationals. But international is the far right, let's say, of a continuum that would begin with the individual on the other end. So you have the individual and the international on two extremes of a continuum. And if we don't understand where we began with individualism, how can we understand internationalism or collectivism? Dropping down in these footnotes, very interesting footnotes, sometimes the footnotes in these various old books that I collect are more interesting than the text. When Wesley, here's a footnote, when Wesley refused, now who knows who Wesley is, John Wesley was the founder of the Methodists. When Wesley refused, though earnestly requested by his father to leave Oxford, he wrote, quote, "The question is not whether I could do more good to others there than here, but whether I could do more good to myself, seeing wherever I can be most holy myself, there I can most promote holiness in others." Rather a good phrase, turn of words there. Wherever I can myself hold these certain views, there I can most promote those views to others, whether you use holiness or something else. So, anyway, he continues and he says, "My chief motive," he wrote, "when starting for Georgia is the hope of saving my own soul. I hope to learn the true sense of the gospel of Christ by preaching it to the heathen," he wrote. And it continues. Let's go back to the text here. The theology, again, which insisted upon personal responsibility and treated each man as himself, bound to work out his own salvation, had an obvious affinity to the political philosophy, which regards men almost exclusively as separate individuals, and made it the aim of law to secure for every person freedom to work out his own happiness. And we find the interlink now, the tie starting to be shown. What is this happiness principle? I'll repeat that sentence. Again, it was out of the writings of Dicey that I really started to catch the thread of this idea of the pursuit of happiness. I realized, having read the Declaration of Independence hundreds and hundreds of times, I had glossed over that pursuit of happiness without having any clue whatsoever of what it was all about. And I started to dig in and find out something about it. What is the pursuit of happiness? Well, again, the theology, again, which insisted upon personal responsibility. You know, I like to say there's authority, responsibility, and accountability. All three of those work together. For those of you that own your own businesses or have ever been worked in business or elsewhere, or been given jobs of a, you know, responsibility, you can understand this cycle, the business cycle. When I was working in management, I would put out we had a need for something. I had a need that needed to be filled, and it was going to be filled by an individual with certain talents and abilities. And so we would advertise and we would promote our need. And then the applicants would respond. And when they responded, then, of course, you know, you'd ask for the resume and do that all and do the interviews and things like that. And then you'd make a selection. And you would say, you would interview someone and you would say, well, we've looked at everybody else, you know, thank you for, you know, applying for this position. And it looks to me like you're qualified to do the job and so on and so forth. And this is the amount of money that we're willing to offer you. And this is the number of hours that you would work. And this will be your office. And these are the things that we expect out of you. Do you want the job? And if the fellow or lady said yes, well, there you go. Now that's the beginning of contract. You had a need, and the applicant accepted the responsibility to fulfill that need. If you were a good employer, if you will, a wise custodian, you must give that person the authority to discharge their duty. They have to have the authority to do it. They need to have the ability, if necessary, to commit land, labor, and capital towards accomplishing the end that they were hired. So now we have responsibility and we have authority. We've conveyed their authority. And we, the people, have elected someone, and they said, you know, they ran for office, and we looked at them compared with all of the others, and we cast a ballot, and then they were the ones that were elected. And then when they swear into office, they've accepted that responsibility. And then we finance them. That gives them the authority, but there's a missing element, and we'll cover that in just a moment. Stay with us.
Invest. You buy insurance. You wear your seatbelt. You do things to ensure your family's future and protection. But why? Just in case? With the current state of affairs, ask yourself, am I ready? Preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com. SurvivalGearSource.com has a huge selection of vital products, emergency survival kits, gas masks, MREs, products for pet care, your car, home, office, and school. Protect against pandemics, all natural disasters, and terror attacks that can happen at any time. If you're not prepared, the last place you want to be is standing in a FEMA line. Invest in your future now. Visit SurvivalGearSource.com or call 877-231-1925. That's 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. That's SurvivalGearSource.com. 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. Prepare for tomorrow now, and for a free gift on your first order, enter coupon code ORACLE at checkout. Don't forget, preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com.
Now on DVD, my newest documentary film, The Secret Rite, Volume 1. I'm Josh Reeves, and for the almost 2 years, I have researched the secretive right-wing group known as the Council for National Policy. This film explores for the first time the hidden hand that controls the religious and military aims of the American right wing, with such topics as Iran-Contra, the John Birch Society, eugenics, the Vatican controllers, Christian Zionists, the Bohemian Grove, the Patriot Movement, and more. More powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations, more secretive than the Bilderberg Group, The Secret Right Volume 1 goes where no other film has dared to go. Get your copy today at SecretRightMovie.com. That's www.SecretRightMovie.com. And find out what you haven't been told about the New World Order.
Today.
How would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
And we have returned, and of course the call-in numbers remain 866-841-1065. If you want to join in on the conversation, your calls are certainly welcome. Don't dwell on that very often, but, you know, you are always welcome to call in on these broadcasts. This way we can have a two-way dialogue instead of just a monologue on a daily basis. But this information, I believe, is important enough and warrants our careful understanding and study so that we could perhaps get a better handle on things that's happening around us, where we've been, where we're going. But as in the preceding segment, we talked about this idea of responsibility and then authority. Once you found that candidate, you give them their authority. But the third part is often overlooked, and we rarely ever hear it spoken of. Now it's been spoken of more lately. Back in 2004, I did a series on responsibility and authority and accountability, and it seemed to catch on, got out into common parlance. But accountability is not the same as responsibility. Accountability is a much bigger thing than that. It's like a ledger sheet. And we know who we hired and why we hired the person, and we gave them the opportunity and the ability to commit land, labor, and capital to affect the accomplishment of their responsibility, to accomplish the task they were hired to do. But then, unless we were just idiots and lousy managers and stewards, then we have to go through the next step, which is to keep a careful ledger sheet and have, you know, pluses and minuses, and hold them to account. It's an accounting. It's a ledger. It's a weighed in the balance, as you say. Judgment, if you will. And this plays into the understanding and helps us to understand better where the philosophical radicals were going and what is meant by religion and how it has worked in society and how it has morphed over the centuries. But, again, I'll just say it one more time, right out of the book here, that the theology, again, which insisted upon personal responsibility and treated each man as himself, bound to work out his own salvation, take that any way you want to, had an obvious affinity to the political philosophy, which regards men almost exclusively as separate individuals, and made it the aim of law to secure for every person freedom to work out his own happiness. So they're equating salvation and happiness as part of this matrix. Continuing, nor from one point of view was evangelical teaching opposed to the fundamental dogma of Benthamism, and we're talking about Jeremy Bentham here. Paley's principle of moral and political philosophy, of which the publication preceded by 4 years, the appearance of Bentham's treatise on the principles of morals and legislation, was the extension of the greatest happiness principle to the sphere of religion. This greatest happiness principle, had you ever heard of it before you heard me speaking about it? I don't think so, probably not. The greatest happiness principle, what is that? Well, we'll find out and we'll continue. But here it was in Paley's principles of moral and political philosophy where he extended it extended, he had this great extension of the greatest happiness principle, and he extended it into the sphere of religion. And Paley was accepted by the religious world of England as the philosophical theologian of the age. Paley, P-A-L-E-Y. Nor need this excite surprise. The preachers who, whether within or without the limits of the Church of England, aroused the consciousness of Englishmen to a sense of religious and moral duty by appeals to the dread of hellfire in the next world, and the thinkers, so we have the preachers on one side, the thinkers on the other, who pressed upon Englishmen the necessity and wisdom of promoting in this world, insofar as law could accomplish the end, the greatest happiness of the greatest number, relied alike in the theory that upon the principle of utility, which bade every man to strive for the attainment, whether in this world or in any other, of the greatest possible happiness. So much written in this one sentence by Dicey. He's really laying it out for us here. Valuable, worth the price of the book. So we find this Jeremy Bentham and the Utilitarians, James Mill, the father of John Stuart Mill, and John Stuart Mill carrying on in their stead this idea of the Utilitarians, utilitarianism. We understand that this greatest happiness principle was extended into the sphere of religion by the preachers, but the thinkers also extended it into the area of law. Continuing here, practically both the preachers and the philosophers appealed to much nobler feelings than the mere desire to avoid pain or to enjoy pleasure. And if we go back and understand the writings of Thomas Hobbes, Leviathan, and all of that, and a lot of the other earlier philosophers, this balance of pain and pleasure, people would do something to avoid pain, and they would do something else to gain pleasure. And so law and order and religion was all based on this two balance pans, pain and pleasure. But they're starting to see that there might be something more than the idea of just avoiding pain or enjoying pleasure. The evangelical teachers and philosophical radicals urged their disciples, though in very different ways, to lead better and nobler lives. And in the preambles to Agenda 21, it says, in this new age, this 21st century, it's not about having more, but about being more. This humanitarian stuff that came out of the mind of Auguste Comte, altruism, living our lives through others. Again, these evangelical teachers and philosophical radicals appealed as regards matters of national concern, to the public spirit and to the humanity of Englishmen. They excited among all whom they could influence the hatred of palpable injustice, and felt themselves and kindled among others a special abhorrence for that kind of oppression which manifestly increased human suffering. And we're walking into, you know, like I like to say, we're walking barefoot on the upturned edge of Occam's razor here, going from the simple to the very complex. We're beginning to enter into a time period which will lead us into socialism from individualism and collectivism as opposed to individualism. Even though there was just a very brief period of time where individualism was really gaining ground. Continuing here, Wesley on his deathbed wrote to encourage Wilberforce in his glorious enterprise in opposing that execrable villainy, the slave trade, which is the scandal of religion, of England, and of human nature. Whilst Jeremy Bentham in a later year wrote to express his sympathy with the exertions of Wilberforce in behalf of the race of innocents whose lot has hitherto been made to be the subject matter of depredation for the purpose of being treated worse than the authors of such crimes are treated for those crimes in other places. Lots of words there. All the author is doing here is showing by two quotations that the evangelicals, the preachers, and the social workers, if you will, through Bentham, were expressing the same thing, approaching it from two different directions. The community, or this community of feeling, points to the humanitarianism, which during the latter part of the 18th and the first half of the 19th century was in England the noblest trait of religious and of philosophical reformers, humanitarianism. Again, we go right back to August Comte, the founder of positivism, for that. Pick it up on the other side. The plot thickens. Definitely does.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate control clock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skin care, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at purebulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at purebulk.com.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monkey is a book of profound importance that helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book, exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
Now, if you haven't started to get the idea of where this is going, I'll give you a little bit of a tip, something that I've seen in all of this. You know, what we're always hearing about, you know, the Christian Patriot Movement, you know, and there's a lot involved in all of this, the evangelical right wing, you know, and that sort of stuff. There's a lot involved in all of this. But what do we know about it? We just take these things in stride. So many of the documents that have been produced in the last couple of decades in support of the, you know, Christians, onward Christian soldiers and all of that, patriots, and railing against all of the despotisms, and there's a lot involved in all of this. And there's more than meets the eye. Let's find out. We're about to get there. Again, this community of feeling, look at the, you know, community of feeling. This transition away from reason, the age of reason, into the idea of emotion, that's a very important transition. But this community of feeling points to humanitarianism. Of course, humanitarianism is the antithesis, really, of individualism. Humanitarianism is 100% in line with the idea of altruism. Both of the, altruism is a word that was coined by Auguste Comte, the positivist philosopher and political scientist, if you will, loosely, guardedly, advisedly, and the founder of the Universal Religion for Humanity, by the way. These utopians always come up with this trio, the triune, the political system, the philosophy, and then the religion that goes with it. And Auguste Comte was not slack in that. But again, and continuing, he says, which during the latter part of the 18th and the first half of the 19th century was in England the noblest trait alike of religious and philosophic reformers. In minor, though significant characteristics, the moral tone of Benthamism is akin to evangelicalism. And Bentham says, and John Stuart Mill, comma, both wrote and felt as if the moral standard ought not only be the paramount, which it ought, but to be alone, as if it ought to be the sole master of all our actions and even all of our sentiments, as if either to admire or like or despise or dislike a person for any action which neither does good nor does harm, or which does not do a good or a harm of proportion to the sentiment entertained, were an injustice or a prejudice. All of those words. I mean, John Stuart Mill, if you haven't read him, he's a bit much to read. Brilliant. You know, as a child, went through a horrible mental breakdown, but nevertheless, a homeschooled, brilliant man, son of James Mill. But he's pointing here, looking at both politics and religions, to the moral guide, to the moral fabric of the society. And we've talked about the moral breakdown in our society, subsequent to Hollyweird and the rest of that. Morals plays a big part in all of this, and it's not churchianity, it's morals. This non-denominational system. Dropping down further, I'll spare you a continuation of Bentham and John Stuart Mill. Hence, the church movements, which from one side or another have attacked and undermined the power of evangelicalism. You wouldn't think that was the case. Why were the church movements, the church growth movements, the church movements, why would it be that they were attacking and undermining the power of evangelicalism as the assailants of individualism have been in the social or political sphere the conscious or the unconscious allies of collectivism? Curious. Curious. On the one hand, we have those that are railing against the machine, you know, John Birch and those guys are, you know, anti-collectivism and so on. And at the same time, very, you know, open and out front with their Christian faith. And at the same time, we've got sentences like this coming out of the mind of a guy like Albert Van Dicey, who, as I remind you, held the Vicenarian chair at Oxford, which is the same chair that was created for Sir William Blackstone, author of the Laws, Commentaries on the Laws of England. I'll give you the sentence again. Hence the church movements, which from one side or another have attacked and undermined the power of evangelicalism have, the church movements have, as the assailants of individualism, been in the social or political sphere, the conscious or the unconscious allies of collectivism. Continuing, any movement which emphasizes the importance of the church as a society of Christians must, in the long run, direct men's thoughts towards the importance of the state as the great political and moral organism of which individual citizens are members. This is true of teachers whom no one would dream of placing among the high churchmen. Curious. Who are our friends in all of this, and who are our enemies in all of this? Who are our allies, if you will? Dr. Arnold and F.D. Maurice each brought into prominence the idea of a Christian position as a member of the church. Dr. Arnold carried this idea so far as to advocate a fusion between church and state, which should exclude from citizenship any man avowedly not a Christian. And Arnold, as we have seen, stood apart from the liberals of his day by denunciation of laissez-faire and his opposition to the whole view of life and society represented by Benthamism. Maurice was so profoundly impressed with the evils of unrestricted competition that at a time when socialists were decried throughout England, he and his disciples preached the doctrine, if they did not create the name, of Christian socialism. Curiouser and curiouser. Continuing a little further along here, the attack on individualism, then, in any sphere, means the promotion of a state of public feeling which fosters the growth of collectivism in the province of law. Politics are not the same as law, Dicey continues, but in modern England, any revolution in political ideas is certain to correspond with alterations in legislative opinion. If then we take care not to confound the accidental division of parties with essential differences of political faith, then we discover a change in the world of politics which closely resembles, if it not be rather a part of, the transition with which these lectures have been occupied from individualism to collectivism. One example of this change in political opinion is to be found in the altered attitude of the public towards peace and economy. During the era of Benthamism, peace and retrenchment were the watchwords of all serious statesmen, from which we get the League of Nations and the United Nations and all that. This formula has now fallen out of remembrance, conveniently overlooked, no doubt. The point to be noted is that this fact is significant of a very profound revolution in political belief. The demand for peace abroad and economy at home stood in very close connection with the passion for individual freedom of action, which was a leading characteristic of Benthamite liberalism. Peace ought to mean light, and war certainly does mean heavy taxation. But heavy taxation, whether justifiable, as it often is, or not, always must be a curtailment of each citizen's power to employ his property in the way he himself chooses. It is an interference, though in many cases a quite justifiable interference, with his liberty. The augmentation, moreover, of the public revenue by means of taxation is not only a diminution of each taxpayer's private income and of his power within a certain sphere to do as he likes, but also an increase in the resources and the power of the state. But to curtail the free action of individuals and to increase the authority of the government was to pursue a policy opposed to the doctrine and still more to the sentiment of Benthamite liberals. Indifference to the mere lightening of taxation as an end absolutely desirable in itself is assuredly characteristic of a state of opinion under which men expect far more benefit for the mass of the people from the extension of the power of the state than from the energy of individual action. Taxes, taxes and more collectivist taxes. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
How would you like to cook any meal using no electricity or gas and cook your meals off the grid? Well, now you can, thanks to the Survival Oven. The Survival Oven is the most amazing off-grid solar oven that can cook anything that a conventional oven can without the energy bills. By condensing sunlight, the Survival Oven can produce temps up to 350 degrees, cook delicious and nutritious meals, sterilize water, dehydrate food, and so much more, all at zero operating costs. The Survival Oven can be used year-round, even in the coldest sub-zero temperatures, and is a must for emergency preparedness and even everyday use. Visit SurvivalOven.com to get your very own Survival Oven. Order the Survival Oven now, and we'll get you started with 2 cooking pots and a recipe booklet absolutely free. At less than 10 pounds, you can take Survival Solar Oven with you anywhere. Call 877-642-1553 or go to SurvivalOven.com. That's SurvivalOven.com.
Okay, so we're back once again in the last segment of today's broadcast. And these broadcasts, they just sometimes they just roll together in my mind, and so I have to really struggle to keep it clearly in my mind what we've discussed and what we've seen. But as we go into this and understand more about it, one of the reasons why the adage is out there in common parlance and wide circulation that it's just not appropriate to discuss politics and religion is because politics and religion are almost inseparable. They go hand in hand, and if we to understand politics and religion well, then we're not really talking about politics and religion, we're talking about the same thing. It basically boils down to belief systems, and they are intermarried and they're interlinked. And they've worked hand in hand over these past 6,500 years of history that we've touched on briefly, going back to the Oriental despotisms and coming forward from the Egyptians and the Babylonians, etc. But one of the reasons why no one really wants to talk about politics and religion in public is because they'll be forced to speak of politics and religion as being not but the same. So let's go into this a little bit further. It says the growth of the right wing of the moderate party signifies ipso facto, and now we're into the Encyclopedia of the Social Sciences, continuing in our discussion of revolution and counter-revolution. The growth of the right wing of the moderate party signifies ipso facto an increase in the strength of reactionary groups not included in the government bloc and paves the way for counter-revolution. In a bourgeois revolution, that's the upper middle class, but remember there's the entrepreneurial classes, it's really a very upper middle class. We're talking about people who own those small businesses that employ 500 or more employees, hardly small business, but anyway. In a bourgeois revolution, counter-revolution is the concern of whom? Royalty. It'll be all of the bloodlines, you know, of the Illuminati. Royalty. Nobility, that would be all of the lessers. The lessers, those would be the, used to be the lords and the vassals. The clergy, be all of the churches and churchianity, whether you're talking about the Episcopal Church, the Established Church of England, or whether you're talking about the Catholic Church, the clergy, whether you're talking about the Jesuits or the Black Pope or the White Pope or whatever Pope or Mama, Papa, and Daddy too, and the aristocratic officers and officials, and now we've invoked the senators and the governors and all of that. This is the, in a bourgeois revolution, counter-revolution is the concern of the royalty, the nobility, the clergy, and the aristocratic officers and officials. While in a proletarian socialist revolutionary attempt, it is the function of the capitalist bourgeoisie and its following. So now we're starting to see on one side of this struggle for power globally, you have had all of the corporate identities and all of what you could say would be nouveau riche, even though it may be three or four generations in coming, from the DuPonts and the others and Henry Ford and all of that. And on the other side, you have this old world, royalty, nobility, clergy, and aristocratic officers and officials, the lords, the ladies, and so on and so forth. And they're embroiled in this revolution, counter-revolution, one side pushing back from the other. The Council of Foreign Relations and the Council for National Policy, so go on either sides of an issue. A revolution and a counter-revolution. And the fundamental practical problem which counter-revolution must seek to solve arises from the fact that the groups which stand to benefit by it are too weak numerically to carry it through by their own unaided efforts, especially since the revolution has deprived them of much of the prestige and social influence which they enjoyed under the old regime. And so what happens in this case is that both sides make appeals to the proletariat, to the great masses, the unwashed, to the profane. The adepts make an appeal to the profane. They need the numbers. That's how they carry on the Crusades and things like that. That's how they carry on worldwide war number one and worldwide war number two, where millions and millions of the boys, hardly a boy, you take up a rifle and go to kill someone, you're no longer a boy, you become a man. But all the boys are pitted in these struggles for economic and social and political and theological power by these two revolutionary and counter-revolutionary forces. Dropping down a little bit in this article, the experience of National Socialism, now I'm jumping ahead a bit because we've been all around this. The experience of National Socialism in Germany has shown, however, that counter-revolution in a radical socialist disguise can attract the support of the unemployed, the youth, and the unskilled more readily than that of skilled labor organization and free trade unions and educated in the traditions of social democracy. This counter-revolution in a socialist disguise can attract the support of the unemployed, the youth, and the unskilled
more readily than that of skilled labor organization and free trade unions and educated in the traditions of social democracy. That's what the National Socialists in Germany played upon. It was how you fill up the rank of the Hitler Youth and the Brown Shirts. You appeal to the unemployed and to the youth and to the unskilled. Whereas the other side, the revolutionary force, has to appeal to and makes their appeals to the skilled labor in free trade unions, etc., and the educated in the colleges, all those educated in social democracy. There are two distinct stages in the development of a counter-revolution, our authors write here. In the first, the groups with which counter-revolutionary tendencies originate recognize the necessity of accepting the achievements of the revolution in order that it may be stopped before it undermines the old structure at the really decisive points. I've said many times, it's so easy to tear down the outhouse or the old house or the cabin or whatever, but it's difficult to build. And so when we're involved in these revolutions and counter-revolutions, it is necessary to recognize these key points where the revolution must be stopped. You don't want to bust up the system so badly that it becomes a hopeless wreck. And everybody descends into the dark ages and we have to start all over again. You blow out all of the infrastructure and all of the means for keeping it and sustaining it, if you will. And it destroys everything, and every hope for any progress is just set back like turning back the hands of the clock or throwing away modern calendars. But it is probable that even at this time there exists a small group of convinced admirers of the old order, but insofar as they frankly advocate restoration, they do not count politically. The outstanding leaders of the class endangered by the revolution understand clearly that at this juncture, intransigence means political suicide. Now, bring all of this out to your attention because we have lots of people out there championing for this and championing for that, while the whole house of cards seems to be collapsing and crumbling down around us. Before we tie our tail onto the kites of some of these, you know, look at me, boys. As I said the other day, we have so many Trojan horses inside of the gates of our city these days that they've got escalators running up and down inside them with neon signs. Look at me, follow me, crowning kings and queens where no kings or queens are either wanted or desired, building new institutions where none are neither needed nor desired, self-effacing, self-promoting, this plethora of groups and the group mentality. Now, I'm all about the local voting precinct group. That's not really a group. There's no reason to incorporate or anything else. You're just working mano-a-mano with your neighbors to affect change locally. That's different. We already have existing systems that are in great disrepair that need to be rebuilt, but we don't have to burn the outhouse down. We just need to figure out how the outhouse is supposed to work and what's wrong with it and then fix it. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. We won't be talking about potty then, but we'll be talking about something along this very same line. Hope to see you then. Till then, good day.
Taking it back, one precinct, one county, one state at a time. You've been listening to Become Vocal Local.
Loan modifications don't work, at least not without some leverage from a forensic audit by mortgage fraud examiners. Have your payments skyrocketed under an adjustable rate mortgage? Have you been laid off or had your hours cut? Are balloon payments coming due? Congress and the White House are pinning their hopes on homeowners renegotiating their mortgages to stop the housing crisis. Trouble is, the banks are saying no 80% of the time. That's where Mortgage Fraud Examiners comes in. They perform forensic loan audits and appraisals to find legal deficits in your mortgage. They estimate that up to 85% of all mortgages have legal problems. Banks and lenders suddenly start cooperating if faced with a lawsuit for violating lending laws or appraisal fraud. you could gain some powerful ammunition to use for mortgage fraud examiners. Get more information at www.mortgagefraudexaminers.com or call 800-540-EXAM. That's 800-540-3926.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.